Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and normally right now I would be saying that I'm joined by my co-host, Phil Huff, but guess what, loyal listeners? Phil is not here today for an unusual reason. Phil is on jury duty. Well, for those of us who've ever been on jury duty, not me, I'd say what a great way to support your civic system. Phil, we're very proud of you for being on jury duty. It may be a couple of days, but I think he'll be back by next week. Hopefully it's a case that will settle and he'll be off jury duty. But anyway, no Phil today due to jury duty. I'd like to start with a little weather, and then we're going to introduce our guest, a very timely guest for this year because it has to do with snow. However, let's start with a bit of weather. So what's happening on this wonderful Thanksgiving week in the weather outlook? And it looks like it's going to be pretty good weather for those of us around the Sandpoint area who need to travel or are expecting guests for the Thanksgiving holiday. Today, we can expect some patchy freezing fog, then mostly sunny, a high of 34. Tonight, a low of 21, a little bit cloudy. Tomorrow, probably a big travel day for a lot of people, mostly cloudy and very windy. So if you're traveling in your big minivan or your camper, you would want to be careful because the high will be 30, but it could be quite windy. Then tomorrow night, Wednesday, we've got mostly cloudy and still windy with a low of 17. And then Thanksgiving Day, that's what we're all wondering about when our family is gathering, we're making our turkeys, etc. And it looks pretty good, everyone. Partly sunny and blustery. And then partly sunny, high of 27, kind of chilly, and then a low that night of 12. Well, Friday, when you're wanting to work off that Thanksgiving Day turkey meal and you're waking up after a sleepy afternoon, it's going to be sunny and you're going to want to get outside, I think. High of 26 and a low in the night, that'll be chilly. Well, not snow really in the forecast, but we are here to talk about snow and all things related to snow as they work with our avalanche folks that are helping us stay safe in the Idaho Panhandle. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Kevin Davis. He's the forecaster and the founder of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, acronym IPAC. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Julie.
It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and boy, our timing could not be better. Even though we don't have a bunch of snow in the forecast, Schweitzer's going to be opening. There's snow up on the mountaintops. We've got to start thinking about snow and snow safety.
Isn't that great?
That's true.
I love to see it this time of year.
Oh, gosh, we're all hoping for some snow, at least up high, if not down here in the valley. So, Kevin, why don't you tell us a little bit about your work with IPAC, Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. I might not say that entire title again. I may just continue with IPAC. But tell us about you and your personal background.
Well, I've been involved with IPAC since about 1998, more dedicated basis since 1998. When I first moved here in 93, I was kind of just a ski bum and did a lot of skiing. And there was a avalanche forecast that was put out to the public on an occasional basis, primarily when the avalanche conditions were bad, right? And that was two guys from the Forest Service in Coeur d'Alene. We're putting out a public advisory since the mid-80s. So I'm actually not the founder, but thanks for the recognition.
Okay. And that forecast that they were putting out was for just the whole backcountry and Schweitzer, everything? What were they forecasting?
Right. It was when weather conditions were particularly bad, and they could assume that avalanche conditions were bad based on the severity of the weather. And it was more like a public bulletin. And so I noticed that and I started kind of tuning into it, but occasionally it wouldn't be updated or it was kind of just a blanket warning.
Yes, like for the whole region. So right. There you were, a ski bum, and not wanting to get avalanched, and you didn't have very good information.
Right. So I was working with his nickname is Bones. His name's Bob Kassoon. He and Al Isaacson, both hydrologists from Coeur d'Alene, were putting out that bulletin. And I worked with Bones a little bit in the summer, and I said, hey, I'm out there, and I dig pits to check out the avalanche conditions. why don't I send you some information occasionally? And it'll help you with the conditions up here in the Selkirks primarily. And he said, that'd be great. Yeah, I'd love to have that. And so we continued, working together and getting to know each other. And then the next year, he said, how'd you like to get paid to do that? And I said, heck yeah.
Ski in the backcountry, yeah. Get paid, save yourself from avalanches. Right. What could be better?
So we worked on putting out a little bit more regular avalanche advisory, and that was over a phone hotline. This is pre-smartphone technology.
So you basically had to do the pit tests and call him, and then he'd put it on a recorded message.
Right. And we also developed an email list that would go out to people that wanted to get the information on their computers, but the phone hotline as well. And that was high tech, man, having the email list of people that would get the advisory. And that was from probably 98 to the early 2000s. And then we got a website through the Forest Service. So Bones and I are both, he's retired now, but we're Forest Service employees. And so this was a winter gig primarily.
And I suppose did Bones have some sort of education in this work? Or
yeah, he took a number of avalanche classes, but he kind of developed his skills and the advisory in tandem. I was similar, as I got more involved, I went and got more training. But it was partly just so I could stay alive and continue to enjoy backcountry skiing. I figured I better get a little more educated.
But a lot of your education was just out there in the snowy, avalanche-prone backcountry.
Right, right. When I first started doing this, I couldn't go out in the snow and not dig a pit and check the conditions. I guess I was just kind of destined to be a snow geek.
You were sort of born for avalanche safety. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about Friends of IPAC. When did that begin? The purpose, mission, et cetera. Give us a history.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got our first friends. Felt pretty good about that. We started working on the concept in 2009. I think we actually got the 501c3 in 2010. And that was largely the work of Scott Rulander, and Gary Quinn had a lot to do with that as well. They put a lot of work in getting that 501c3 set up, and it came from their recognition that we could do a lot more with putting out avalanche advisories to alert the public and offering more education if we had a 501c3 that could assist with grants and equipment and additional people like Scott and Gary, who are passionate about avalanche education.
Yeah.
and information. And so the Friends group came from those two, and since 2010, it's really grown to quite the network of people, and it's given IPAC, through that collaboration, the ability to offer a lot more classes. We do two advisories a week now, working up to 5 to 7 days a week eventually. That's kind of the long-term goal.
Well, in order for you to be able to offer advisories more often, that must be more people. Tell us about who works at Friends.
Well, we've got a lot of folks. Jeff, the director of IPAC, is also kind of the director of the Friends group.
Okay, Jeff Thompson.
Jeff Thompson, right?
Yes.
He started in 2016, came up here from Colorado. He was like an angel that just kind of dropped down from the clouds, from Colorado. Having him has been great because he's really, he lives this stuff. He's a ski patroller. He's got an avalanche dog. This is his life, this is what he chooses to do. And so he's instrumental in leading it. There's several people from the Silver Valley area, Gabe White, Larry Banks, Mike Breed, Tom Eddy. There's, I hope that, I don't forget anybody.
But these folks are instrumental in seeing that that your organization has information about snow condition and also works, I suppose, on getting more people involved, right?
Well, and they help us with everything. They help with the classes that that we're doing, with the promotional fundraisers like the Thunderstruck video that's coming up this weekend at the Panada.
Let's just take an aside and talk about that, because we're going to want to mention this a couple of times during the hour for our listeners. Tell us what is the event and when, and then we'll come back into the interview.
That's a snowmobile video that we'll be showing at the Panada on November 29th. And so
That's this Friday.
That's this Friday, right? So,
right.
It's geared to snowmobilers and snow bikers that they can get together, get excited for the winter, and hopefully talk a little bit of snow safety while they're checking out the hot videos of what their big goals for the winter, maybe tackling that next move.
And it's a fundraiser, so when they buy that ticket, it's going to help out your organization?
Exactly. Yes. All the money goes to advisories and education.
That's really good. Now, of course, I've digressed. We've got to get back into the interview, but we're talking about the growth of IPAC, and I don't know that we really got into, like, mission. We've gotten history. We know the purpose. You want to keep people safe, right, from avalanches and understanding about snow.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's the whole deal. You can put out a lot of advisories, but you also have to educate people on how to use that advisory. So that's part. If you sign up for a level one avalanche class, you'll get the whole picture on how to read the terrain, how to assess the snowpack, the different ways that you can test for snow stability. But then it's also how do you interpret an avalanche forecast?
Yes, and I bet not that many people take that AVI 1 course. I imagine that's a small percentage of our population.
I'm not sure how many people actually, what is the percentage, but I think you're probably right. Some people think that they might not need to get the avalanche education. But I would say that if you're getting into the backcountry and you're riding or skiing in avalanche terrain, which most likely you are, because the slopes that we like to play on are the avalanche terrain, right?
Boy, that's true. And it's not Nordic skiers. It's all kinds of people that are out in the wintertime, right, as you just mentioned, snowmobilers and bicyclers.
So if you're finding that you're going into avalanche terrain more, then it probably would be good for you to take a level one avalanche class, because it might open your eyes to some of the things that you've been experiencing out there, and maybe make more sense and give you the ability to recognize hazards that you may not have recognized in the past.
Yeah, to say stay safe with you and your family. Is that something that IPAC sponsors? Do you all do Avalanche One training?
Oh, yeah. Yep. We've got a class scheduled for every month this winter. My first one will be in January, and that's a motorized class. So we'll be doing a class for snowmobilers and snow bikers. Last year, we did a snow bike specific avalanche class for the timber sled guys, and we went up in the Selkirks and had a great day digging pits and doing terrain assessment with those guys. So we have classes every month from January, February, March, and you could go to our website, idahopanhandleavalanche.org and register online for those.
Okay. And do they fill up pretty quickly? I would think they might.
I think two of them are already full. So,
get on it, folks.
Get on it.
If you want to learn, you need to get in there and stay safe. You know, we're kind of still working our way through everything that Friends of IPAC is about, and I'm interested in knowing the region, the geography. How large is the region that you cover?
Right. It's actually pretty large. The northern region is the Selkirks and the Cabinet Mountains, and the southern region is the Silver Valley. So you got the mountains around Wallace and all the way up to Lookout Pass, and just north of the highway there. So that I-90 corridor is our south region. We used to have a forecaster that was out of Avery, and he would give us information from the St. Joe Mountains just a little further south, but he retired, and we don't have like the weekly pit data from that area, so you won't see that area covered on our website with a polygon, but loosely you could probably translate some of that information from the Silver Valley. Sure. A little bit further south.
At this time, you never know. You might pick up a person from the St. Joe.
You never know. But we did pick up Ben Bernal. He's over on the Kootenai National Forest out of Troy, Montana. And we added his forecast area of the Cabinets. They refer to them in Montana as the East Cabinets. And around Libby, and then the Purcell Mountains up in the northwest corner of Idaho and Montana. So Ben's great. He's been working really hard over there, and it used to be part of the Flathead Avalanche Center, but 2 years ago he kind of defected from the Flathead, and we're glad to have him here at IPAC.
Good for us. More safety on this side of on the Idaho side of things,
right.
Idaho, Montana. You know, it's a lot of people out there digging snow pits and making reports. Makes me wonder, how do you fund this work?
Well, the forecasters are Forest Service employees, so we get an annual budget through recreation dollars to fund our time, and the rest is the folks that are submitting observations and assisting with the advisory in a number of different ways, they're funded through the Friends group.
Okay.
So these avalanche classes help fund that, the tuition from the avalanche classes that we do, and we're looking for grants that help fund the operation. So.
Sure, and fundraisers like the one this Friday.
Exactly.
Yes. Are folks that are giving the reports all trained? I imagine they are, and proper understanding of. We've been talking about snow pits, and maybe we should just talk a bit more about that. They're out digging a pit, but they must learn what it all means when they're out checking the snow.
Right. Right. So the folks in the Friends group submit observations, but only the forecasters are writing the advisory. So myself, Jeff Thompson, Melissa Hendrickson, Ben Bernal, and Eric Morgan are the forecasters who write the actual avalanche advisory that you would see on the website.
All right. So volunteers or paid workers are out taking measurements, observations. You all gather that information and then create a report based on your experience.
Exactly. So Monday and Thursdays are our field days, where we go out into various places in the local mountains and dig snow pits, make observations, and we collect all the information that we need to make a accurate avalanche advisory for Tuesday morning at, we're looking at changing the time that we issue those advisories. So it might be 6 or 6:30 this year is what we're thinking.
A.M.
A.M.
All
yes.
right.
So you'll have the advisory with your morning coffee a little earlier potentially this year. And then Friday morning as well. And Friday is an important one because it kind of, the advisory extends into the weekend. So we try to provide a trend in avalanche hazard for the Saturday and Sunday, since, you know, most people are getting out on the weekend.
Oh, heck yeah. I would think that's when the most people that might be in danger are out and about. I would think that's a very important report.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about the relationship with the Forest Service. Is there more you'd like to add?
Well, it traditionally, avalanche study has been a Forest Service endeavor. It started in Little Cottonwood Canyon with Monty Atwater and some folks that were working with the Alta ski area, and they set up weather stations and started doing some of the first study on avalanche dynamics and how to operate a ski area and keep people safe in avalanche terrain. So that was in the 50s, I think. And that was, the Forest Service was the entity that was taking charge on that. And so it's kind of evolved from those initial endeavors in studying avalanches and using explosives within ski area boundaries and mountain passes for highways and things like that.
That's my most vivid memory of avalanche control at the Western ski areas as a kid, and you wouldn't get out skiing until they'd, you know, blown off the avalanches in the morning. You'd hear the explosives, and then you'd be able to get out and go skiing.
Exactly. Yeah, and they still use that method today. Some people ask me if we go out and use explosives on the National Forest to control avalanches, and I said no, it's probably a good thing because I get scared around firecrackers. But
it'd be a big area to have to clear from avalanche danger.
Oh yeah, you can't control avalanches in the backcountry, and that's where getting educated is the best ticket, because you have to be your own avalanche forecaster when you go into the mountains in the winter.
And more people are out in those wilderness areas every winter, and so it can be a very dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is probably potentially one of the more dangerous things that we do, because it's kind of an unseen danger.
It's interesting that you say that, because as I was getting ready to have the morning show coming from Minnesota, I was thinking about what are the winter things that I used to need to worry about, and not even winter and summer. Oh, you might get in a blizzard, and, you know, Minnesota blizzard, but that you can kind of see coming. There might be a tornado. Usually we get a little warning for that. What else can happen? Lightning strikes, something like that. We know how to watch out for that, but we don't really think about getting avalanched when we're just walking on a beautiful, you know, in the beautiful snowy backcountry.
Yeah, and you could have really unstable snow in Minnesota, right?
But it's flat.
It's not going to avalanche on you.
Right, that's right. So, I mean, many of us come from other areas of the country, and I think maybe don't even give it a very careful thought. It's like something that could happen, but we may not realize when we're in severe danger.
Right. Yeah. It's not like avalanches aren't like a fire where you could see that fire burning on the hillside and say, I'm not going over there. No
way.
Exactly. That's dangerous. Where it's almost the opposite with avalanches. You see this beautiful slope that's untracked and it's just beckoning. And that is the thing that could potentially kill you.
So true. I mean, I really started to think about it. We know how to watch for bears, bear spray, but we don't think much about avalanche unless we've lived here a little while and heard from you all. So it's good that we have you here today. We've talked about a bit more about the Forest Service and your relationship, but what about your relationship with local ski areas? I'm thinking, of course, of Schweitzer.
Schweitzer's been great in the years past. They've given us a venue to teach avalanche classes up at the ski area, and like the using the Caribou Lodge to or the Caribou Room in the Day Lodge to do avalanche classes. And Bill Williamson, Tom Chassie, they've been real supportive of IPAC. We've worked with Ken Baird a little bit up there at Selkirk Powder, doing some classes in the past with him. So it's been really instrumental having Schweitzer as a partner, and I think we may have rubbed off a little bit on Schweitzer as well, because their avalanche program with the Transceiver Sundays, they've been doing that for years now, and I'm pretty sure they'll probably be continuing with Transceiver Sundays this winter, where you go up and a couple of ski patrollers will give you hands-on experience and teach you how to use your avalanche beacon. I think they've met at the clock tower at 10 o'clock on Sunday every week, and it's a great opportunity to get some real experience training.
A little bit like bear spray. If you've never used it, when you need it, you might not be quite ready, right? It's good to have the training.
And this, you know, everybody's kind of jonesing to get out there. This is a great time to be practicing with your beacon. I opened one of my transceivers. I shouldn't say this, but, you know, sometimes you leave the batteries in over the summer, and I looked in, and there was a little bit of corrosion on those batteries. Luckily, it wasn't a lot. I was able to clean it out. But get that beacon out of the closet or out of your pack, open it up, see if it's working, and then go out in the yard. You still got leaves in the backyard, and just hide one in the backyard and have your wife or your kids go out and try to find it. Just start practicing with that thing.
Boy, that'd be an easy way to start practicing. You don't even have to get cold and snow, get your coat full of snow or anything.
Right. Yeah, just make sure you turn the thing on before you hide it.
Oh, right. So let's talk a little bit about the advisories. For our listeners this morning, you haven't done this before, how do they find or receive your info?
Well, the biggest platform for our advisories is our website. So three different advisories are posted twice a week on our website under advisories. So that's idahopanhandleavalanche.org. And if you go to the advisories, you'll see the Selkirk Cabinets, the Silver Valley, and then the Kootenai advisories. And so those are... Those are three separate avalanche advisories, and you would, you know, depending on where you're going to ride or ski that day, depends on the advisory you're going to. So if you're going down to Lookout Pass, check out the Silver Valley. I think it's St. Regis Basin in Silver Valley. And those are put out twice a week. There's also the Facebook page, so Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Facebook page. And then Melissa Hendrickson is, she does an Instagram as well. And I kind of draw the line at Facebook. I let her go with the Instagram posting.
But thank goodness there's someone who can reach the crazy young people.
Exactly.
That don't just only go on Facebook.
Well, she's kind of more
good.
She's kind of more of a crazy young person herself, so.
Very good.
We used to have a hotline, a phone hotline. We're not seeing as much use with that, so we're kind of toying with continuing that or not. So,
yes, a phone is sort of the method of last resort these days, isn't it?
Right. Well, it's funny. Everybody has a phone, so maybe we do continue that. But it seems like more people are using Facebook and Instagram, I guess.
Yeah, so many folks have smartphones that you're probably pretty safe.
Yes.
One would think, anyway. Well, we've looked at the sort of looked at the big picture and talked about the advisory, how you got here, et cetera, how you came to be where you are today. But let's sort of drill in a little bit and talk about the dynamics of an avalanche. So what really happens? What happens when an avalanche occurs?
An avalanche is a uniform slab of snow that releases on a steep slope. So if you trigger an avalanche, you'll notice a crack propagating across the slope, and then the slab kind of detaches from the rest of the snow around it and starts sliding downhill, and it's going to pick up speed quick. So in just a matter of seconds, it can go from 0 to 60. And hopefully you're not on that slab. So what needs to happen for that to form is different layers in the snow. And so every storm that comes in deposits a little bit different layer of snow on the ground, right?
Yes.
And sometimes layers of snow are formed even if it's not snowing. That's kind of a hard concept, but it's like frost that forms on the surface of the snow. And sometimes that frost will get buried by subsequent layers of snow from more winter storms. And so you create kind of a layer cake of snow layers in the mountains.
I'm guessing some are more slippery than others.
Right. Some are more slippery. Some are hard. Some are soft. Some are wet. Some are dry, you know, like dry powder is great to be traveling in. But all those layers have inherent stability issues with them. And sometimes we have a stable snowpack and we have layers in the snow, but sometimes there's a very weak layer that gets buried under subsequent layers of snow. And all that needs... just it's kind of tipped up at an angle, and all that thing needs is a trigger to release it. And
something to jostle it, right, or some little thing that gets it going.
Yeah. Sometimes natural avalanches happen all the time, right? You know, like you got snow is just sitting there, and all it needs is one more flake or one little puff of wind or a cornice falling off of a ridge and landing on the slope below. But sometimes that trigger is us. And most often, the avalanches that kill people are triggered by themselves.
Other people or people uphill from them or something.
So we're that extra little oomph of weight and stress on that snowpack that releases the avalanche. And That's the tough reality, but it's actually a good thing because it's not just some random act of God that comes down and takes us away. It's actually us. So that tells you that
we can learn how to avoid avalanching ourselves.
Right.
Well, I think this is a perfect place to take a song break because we've learned a bit about the dynamics of an avalanche. And I'd like to come back after the song break and talk more about how we can prevent that and watch for it. And, of course, what to do if the worst possible thing happens. So for now, for those of you just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. This is Julie Calamine, your Tuesday morning show host. And I'm joined by Kevin Davis. He's a forecaster and, well, according to Kevin, not quite the founder, but an almost founder of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. And we're learning about all things avalanche and snowy wintertime safety. So we will be back shortly to hear more about that. But for now, I hope you'll enjoy Diana. And that was Diana Krall with Let It Snow. Apparently not Kevin's favorite song, but we've got others to come, Kevin, so it won't be too bad. For those of you just joining us, this is Julie Calamine, your KRFY Tuesday morning show host, and you are listening to KRFY, Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle, and we are joined this morning by Kevin Davis, forecaster for Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, and we have been talking about all things avalanche and snow and ski safety in our winter wonderlands. Hello again, Kevin.
Good morning, Julie.
So, something that we want to mention again, because it's pretty important for your organization, is your fundraiser happening this Friday. Go ahead and tell us about it. I've got times. It's 6 p.m. at the Panada this Friday.
Yes, we've got Thunderstruck, and that's a snowmobile, snow bike, kind of like extreme riding video. And if you're a snowmobiler or a snow biker, you're going to want to get over there and check it out. Seeing that on the screen at the Panada is going to be a real treat for you. It'll get you all excited to get out there and hopefully see a bunch of friends that you're looking forward to riding with this winter. So the proceeds from that movie will go to help fund our advisories and more education.
To keep everybody safe out there when
exactly.
They get out there.
Yep.
Well, who doesn't get inspired by a movie or a video like that? The ski ones are great, the snowmobiling ones, even the trout ones. I love those movies, and it does get us all sort of fired up and want to get out.
Yeah, I try to take it easy this time of year because I get all frothed up and then there's nowhere to go right now. So
true. However, Schweitzer is opening.
That's great.
End of the week.
Yeah, so. I'm glad that they're getting us up on the hill for the Thanksgiving.
Get ourselves started on some groomers, and then we'll work on some powder at some point.
Yeah. Everybody just needs to get those legs pumping.
That's right. We'll get ourselves ready. Well, before we had our song break, we were talking a bit about what is an avalanche, and we're back again, and I think it's time to talk more about safety. How does one prepare? What about trainings and assessment? Let's talk about that whole process of how we stay safe, and I know this isn't a heavy one course, but we can hit on some of the basics.
Right. Safety kind of starts with you. You know, it's getting into a process, a mindset that you're going to approach this a little differently. It's not just jumping in the car and grabbing your coffee and heading to work. It's looking at the avalanche advisory before you go out. It's looking at the weather and knowing what the weather's going to do and how that weather's going to affect the avalanche hazard. It's going out with people that you can trust. Whether you're riding or skiing, it's going out with an experienced bunch of guys that you know, guys and gals, that if something goes wrong, you could count on your group to create a good outcome to a bad situation. Right.
And
you want to be able to trust the people that you're with.
And lots of, as you say, lots of preparation, food, your beacon, I'm guessing, ways to contact folks or at least let folks know where you're going, et cetera.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Always tell people where you're heading. Things can change a little bit, but, you know, if you've got a plan, don't diverge from that plan too much. And if you do, make sure that you're aware of how the conditions are going to change based on your new route. The other important thing is to have all the gear, you know. So beacon, probe, shovel is pretty much the standard
avalanche. Those are the big three: beacon,
gear.
Probe, shovel.
Right.
Okay.
Have a beacon, know how to use it. The probe is used when somebody gets buried. And so after you locate them with your beacon, you can probe down and see exactly where they are. So you could start digging to where they're located. And then having a shovel is required because you're not going to be able to dig somebody out with just your hands or your helmet. Or, you know, I've heard of people using the windshield on their snowmobile in a pinch because they don't have a shovel. The shovel is really going to save time, and that's critical because somebody that's buried in an avalanche is suffocating. You know,
yes.
they've only got a limited amount of time, and the shovel is going to get get to them the quickest. So those three items are important. Now there is avalanche airbags. I notice a lot of people out there are using avalanche airbags, and those are designed to buoy you up in a moving avalanche, and so you're more likely to be close to the top when that avalanche comes to a stop. So you're kind of like a little bubble in the moving debris, and they're bright colored. So if maybe you aren't visible yourself, that orange or red airbag is going to be a lot more visible by somebody that's trying to find you.
Sounds like an important piece of gear if you're in the backcountry a lot.
Yeah, they're proven to have worked. It's not a guarantee. None of this stuff is a guarantee that you're going to survive an avalanche. And one of the best quotes that comes to mind is from Dale Atkins, a longtime avalanche professional. He says that go out into the backcountry, have the gear and know how to use it, but act like you left all your equipment at home.
You know, I've just completed a wilderness first aid course, thanks to friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness and Carol Jenkins. Thank you, Carol. And something that I took away was prevent disaster, if so much more important than dealing with a disaster. It sounds like this is another sort of similar situation. You want to prevent, obviously, being avalanched. Let's talk about ways that people can maybe have that happen. What's a person looking for when they're in a potentially dangerous snowy avalanche area?
Terrain recognition is a huge thing. So being able to recognize avalanche terrain is really important, because if the avalanche hazard is considerable or high, you don't want to be in avalanche terrain. There's a good chance that if you step onto a slope that's steep enough to slide, you're going to trigger an avalanche. So recognizing the slope angle, so between 30 and 45 degrees is prime time avalanche steepness. And even more pinpoint than that is like 35 to 40 degrees seems to be the start zone slope angle for a lot of naturally triggered and human triggered avalanches.
Flat enough that snow will stay, but not so steep that it'll just naturally avalanche off.
Exactly. Yeah, right. It's just kind of hanging in the balance there. Oof. Waiting for that trigger.
Sounds like my perfect ski run.
It is. It is. Like that slope angle is like a black diamond ski run.
Oh, boy.
That's where we want to be playing.
That sounds like it.
Right?
It sure does.
So a few years ago, me and a few other guys at the Avalanche Center, with the help of Keith Wakefield, he's a big avalanche dog over on the Colville National Forest, we came up with another acronym. Here you go. That's what we like to do.
Yes, and I'm looking at a nice little, is it a bumper sticker? Something you could put right on your windshield and memorize?
You know what? You could put this sticker anywhere you want.
They've got bunches of them.
But what I like to do with this sticker is I put one on our snowmobile where I could see it, and then I put one on the tip of my ski. So when I'm looking down a slope, I'm looking right past this sticker, reminding myself.
Okay.
What the heck are you thinking?
Go through it. Ride, don't slide. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so SLIDE is an acronym, and I like to think of this as a slope hazard evaluation. So if you're looking at avalanche terrain, be thinking SLIDE. So slope is, you ask yourself, is the slope steep enough to slide? And then if it is, in that slope steepness for avalanches, L is look at the consequences of triggering an avalanche. So if I do, if this slope does rip on me when I get out there, what's going to happen? Am I going to go over a cliff? Am I going to get funneled down into a gully and buried 20 feet deep? Am I going to get pinballed through some trees? And a lot of times that's enough to say, no, yeah, not worth it. But if things are looking okay, I is identify the hazard, and that puts you in the mindset. You know, have I been thinking about how the weather affects the stability? Is this avalanche terrain? And is there a weak layer in the snowpack? So the weather, terrain, and the snowpack are the factors that, lead to avalanche hazard. And have you thought about that? So have you identified what the hazard really is? And then D is decide, you know, based on, those three things, is it a go or is it a no-go?
Right. You've got to decide,
right.
Man.
So you got to decide right then and there.
Right.
Am I going to put myself on the slope? And then if so, at least have an escape route and communicate that to your, partners. You know, it's like, all right, so if this thing rips on me,
Where are we all going?
I'm going to shoot off to the side here.
Okay.
And it's a good idea to be a little defensive to approach things, even if it's feeling good, be a little bit on the defensive so that if all of a sudden you do feel that, boop, oh man, you're ready to go and you're not just taken by surprise.
Yeah, it makes sense. This is a good, this is a great sticker.
And ride,
a good
don't slide.
That's right, and a good acronym. I think even I can remember that one.
All right, put that on your coffee mug.
That's good. Well, Kevin, as our time for the hour winds down, I don't want for us to miss talking about what's happening at Schweitzer with the ski patrol, the snow pit chats, the et cetera, education that we can be aware of.
Right.
So let's jump on that before our time is over.
So, yeah, the Beacon Transceiver Sundays, I think Tom Eddy told me that it'll be happening. So Ski Patrol up at Schweitzer has been really supportive of IPAC. We've gotten some grants from Schweitzer, but Arlene has been great. Jeff Thompson, the director of IPAC, is a ski patroller. Their avalanche dog program is really top-notch now, and Jeff's helping with that. But Ski Patrol has been instrumental. Cass Higgins is on the friends group. Kim Loosemore, they've all been really supportive and great to work with. And I feel like we're just kind of forming this kind of avalanche safety network for the community.
But there's a lot out there between snow pit chats, the Transceiver Sundays. You guys have the avalanche Avi One Level One courses, the IPAC Know Before You Go class, and then Idaho Park and Rec Snowmobile Avalanche class. Did we touch on that? Idaho Park and Rec Snowmobile class.
Yeah, they've been doing snowmobile classes free to the public for, it's been almost 20 years now. We've helped with their classes and teaching those, but they do those every year, and I believe it's January 10th and 11th is going to be the Sandpoint class up here at Sandpoint Marine Motorsports, and then they'll take the group out to Trestle Creek for a kind of like a half-day field session.
Hands-on.
Yeah.
For all the programs and classes, can they find that at your website, at the IPAC site?
Yes. Go to our website, idahopanhandleavalanche.org, and click on the education page. Another thing I'd like to put out there for all the youngsters is the Doug Abramite Avalanche Scholarship. This is something we've been doing for about 5 years now, and Doug Abramite was instrumental in forming in allowing all these avalanche centers nationwide to form. And he was a native Sandpoint boy, was up there the first day of skiing at Schweitzer back in 1963. And he retired to Sandpoint, but unfortunately, he died a few years ago. So we set
not up, in an avalanche.
Not in an avalanche.
Oh,
no,
good.
He died on his mountain bike enjoying life. But we wanted to honor his legacy to this area and to his family and to all the avalanche workers out there by setting up the scholarship where we give a free avalanche class to anyone that submits an essay, and they have to be between 14 and 24 years of age. And we'll pick the best essay on why you should be the recipient of a free avalanche class.
That is great.
Yeah, it's great. Aaron Ellenwood, I believe, is our most recent recipient, and she's from Washington.
Way to go. I think that's a great way to get young people trained in and learning, and they can share with friends, too.
Exactly.
That's so very nice. Well, we're nearing the end of our program. It's gone very quickly. And per my outline and per my own interest, we can't finish this program without talking about Annie the Avalanche Dog. How's she doing?
She's doing great. I see Jeff, several days out of the week. And before I even see Jeff, Annie's out there greeting me because she's hanging out in the office. He's getting her warmed up. He threw a little rag out in the weeds, and we watched her work, and that's what that dog is born to do, man. She's like a hound on a scent, and she's just running back and forth doing her grid. It's pretty amazing to watch her work.
It's great to see a dog trained for something like that and to do it well. I think we're lucky to have her at Schweitzer.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not every ski area has a great Avi dog.
Yeah, it's a great addition to that program.
Well, we have come to the end of our hour, and it's gone quickly, and I haven't even left time for upcoming events. So the only one we're going to mention again this week is your event coming up this Friday. Tell us about it one more time, and then we'll be out with a song.
Thunderstruck is a extreme snowmobiling and possibly snow biking video that is playing at the Panada this Friday, November 29th, and it's a fundraiser for IPAC.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you, Kevin Davis of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, for joining us here at KRFY this morning and talking to us about what's happening with avalanche safety courses, how to stay safe in this beautiful winter wonderland that we all enjoy. I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie.
All right.
Thanksgiving to everybody, and let it snow.
And stay safe out there, everyone. All right, so this one is per our guest, Kevin Davis, and you have probably heard the song before, and it's going to be Fleetwood Mac.